Sherlock,
I'm once again at a crossroads in today's entry in my daily blog.
Daily blog? What's that? Anyway, getting back to your comment, and why is that, Watson?
Because in 1 minute you're screaming out that you cannot make bricks without clay, and in your next breath you say that nothing is more deceptive than an obvious fact.
Watson, my dear man, I see no conflict whatsoever in either explanation.
Holmes, I knew you would take me down that lonesome and very dark alleyway with no exit whatsoever.
Watson, must you always be so dramatic? And if so, you should be on stage at the Piccadilly Theatre in a one-man show.
Back to my blog entry.
Yes, your oh-so-important and focused diary.
The topic for today's blog entry is regarding your techniques and methods for solving mysteries and crimes using deductive reasoning.
Of course. As you know, I actually start from a clean slate with no existing information for comparison on every case I have ever solved. That must be Mrs. Hudson. Most definitely that is her distinctive knock. Come in, Mrs. Hudson.
And how is this beautiful day treating you, Sherlock? And you, Doctor?
Excellent.
It is quite a delightful day, Mrs. Hudson. And you?
My day is going quite well, thank you for asking. So, what are you two gentlemen up to today?
Watson here was just about to educate me on how I solve the most difficult mysteries.
Is that so?
Well, actually, we were...
Well, for example, if a victim went missing for days and was then found dead in a deserted cabin, I would then walk into the crime scene with no previous information to compare anything to and no suspect in mind. I would then simply snoop around to collect
information.
And what
then, Watson?
Perhaps the victim died of natural causes, or of suicide, or foul play, murdered.
Let's not forget about the glass from a broken window, but this might have already been broken when he arrived. Or it may have been broken in a struggle.
Does he have lacerations? Are his clothes damp from the rain outside or dry?
And if we continue to answer these what-ifs and look at every angle of the scene to get enough information...
And then we shall all sort out and scrutinize every detail at hand to come up with a premise that will justify our conclusions. In solving a problem of this sort... The most important thing is to be able to reason backwards. That is a most useful and practical accomplishment, but few people practice reasoning and problem and crime solving backwards, except, of course, Sherlock Holmes. Good morning. I'm Julie Burton, your host, welcoming you to the 17-time award-winning WGTD Radio Theater's live broadcast from the Southwest Branch of the Kenosha Public Library. Today, we bring you the adventures of Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson, the murder of Professor Jeremy Clarkson, in this our 15th season and show number 121. As always, support for the WGTD Radio Theater comes from the Kenosha Law Firm of Aaliyah, Dumay, and McTernan on the web at addmlaw.com and also from the Kenosha Public Library, where Kenosha connects all four branches, Northside, Uptown, Simmons, and right here at the Southwest Branch on the web at mykpl.info. And finally, supporting the WGTD Radio Theater is the not-for-profit Brown Ulster Performing Arts Foundation, located in the village of Salem Lakes, Wisconsin. On the web, it's the brownulsterfoundation.org. Our stars, from the 91.1 Players, today's radio mystery is directed by Renee Bouchel. The original script was written by co-executive producers Stephen Brown and Michael Ulstrup. And now I invite you to listen to Dr. Watson tell us another exciting adventure he shared with his old friend, that master detective, Sherlock Holmes.
Thank you so very much. And that it was. Not only an exciting story, but also quite remarkable. I do believe that today, in 2019, it is called a mashup of stories.
Oh, Dr. Watson, you are not exaggerating, not one tiny bit.
Mrs. Hudson, it was quite strange indeed. And now, the story. It was a blazing hot day in August. Baker Street was like an oven, and the glare of the sunlight upon the yellow brickwork of the houses across the road was painful to the eye. It was hard to believe that these were the same walls which loomed so gloomily through the fogs of winter. Our blinds were half-drawn, and Holmes lay curled upon the sofa, reading and rereading a letter which he had received by the morning post. For myself, my term of military service in Afghanistan had trained me to stand heat better than cold, and a thermometer at 90 was no hardship. But the morning paper was uninteresting.
Watson, my good man, are you still here?
Of course I am.
And so am I, Sherlock.
Is it time for tea already?
Now see here, Sherlock. I am not your house servant.
Oh, yes, of course you're not. I never meant that when I said...
I am just making sure about that, Sherlock.
Holmes, you look awfully tired, old man.
Just a tad bit, I dare say. I believe I shall nap just a quarter of an hour. No more, no less. I'm still in a state of shock after hearing about the murder of my former university calculus professor, Dr. Jeremy Clarkson. He was my favorite professor, you know.
Terrible. Simply terrible.
Oh, how awful.
Yes. I know. It's time for me to sleep.
Charlotte Holmes, is that you? Cousin? Why are you looking about in this dingy and very messy apartment of mine?
Well, if it isn't my cousin... Young Sherlock, as everyone calls you. There you are, sleeping in late as usual. And it's only 11:25 in the morning, and on a Saturday.
Cousin Charlotte, please do not razzmatazz me. Not on a Saturday morning, please.
Okay, okay. Try to chill out, cuz.
I will try. Charlotte, have you seen my violin?
You mean that wicked old thing that's always out of tune?
Yes, it is always out of tune. Yes, that is A. A440 to be precise, which has a frequency of 440 hertz and is a musical note of A above middle C and serves as the general tuning standard for musical pitch.
You are always so precise, Sherlock, never missing a beat, if I may be so musical in my response to you.
Why, of course, dear cousin Charlotte.
Sherlock, I noticed that you were downloading some information from the internet a bit earlier.
Yes, you are correct. My older brother, Mycroft, was droning on and on about the importance of how the tuning of the violin was similar to serving as a member of MI6.
You mean like the CIA in America?
Yes, that is his dream job when he completes his studies at Oxford, you know. MI6, that is all I have ever heard him talk about since he first saw Sean Connery as James Bond.
Did I hear someone mention MI6, James Bond, and my name?
Yes, you are correct. On all three counts, unfortunately.
Hello, Mycroft. How have you been?
I have been perfectly fine, Charlotte. And you?
Well, thank you. School has been quite a chore. And then there's spending time here with your brother.
I could only imagine.
I'm sure you could, dear brother.
This would be a most appropriate place for me, as your host this morning, to step in and say that both young Sherlock and Sherlock as an adult had very strong and unambiguous points of view about his brother, Mycroft. And rather than merely paraphrasing their thoughts, here they both speak.
If the art of the detective began and ended in reasoning from an armchair, my brother Mycroft would be the greatest criminal agent who ever lived.
But he had no ambition.
And no energy. And will not even...
go out of his way to verify his...
own solution, and would rather be...
considered wrong than take the...
Mycroft Holmes here. And yes, I am totally ignoring what Sherlock just blurted out about me. I'm sitting in my favorite chair at the Diogenes Club in London. Before I finally get all of us into the mystery story for today, which my younger brother should have already done so, let me say this about the Diogenes Club. Although there is no hint in the original Sherlock Holmes stories that the Diogenes Club is anything but what it seems to be, some of the past, and even now, believe that the club was founded as a front for the British Secret Service. Yes, MI6. Now, I cannot even begin to talk about whether or not I, Mycroft Holmes, am the supreme and indispensable brain trust behind the British government, who, on my own, pieces together collective government secrets and offers advice on the best way to act. I would only leave such elocutions up to our Prime Minister. Prime Minister.
Thank you, Sir Mycroft. We are at the crossroads at this very moment in time. Allow me to provide you with this additional information. On a cold November morning, a young opera singer, a soprano, I believe, visits 221 Baker Street, desperate for Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson to protect her from the threat of a mysterious, menacing man who has recently reappeared in her life.
Really? A soprano?
Yes. Holmes and Watson agree to help, even though they have just promised me to solve the murder of a quite wealthy British landowner before that terrible incident can derail an upcoming British-American financial summit. Their task, Holmes and Watson, to find the killer and help the opera singer. Holmes and Watson will need all of their talents for both deduction and deception. And when another lovely woman, this one from Holmes's past, reappears and clues to the murder point to Professor Moriarty. And so, the famously analytical detective and good doctor must also look inward.
And so they will.
So I must ask this question. Can Holmes and Watson prevent chaos on both sides of the Atlantic and unmask this newest client's shadowy antagonist? For Holmes and Watson, this is the case that will change everything.
Prime Minister, my brother is an excellent detective, as you know. But, well,
get to the point, man.
He is not a master manipulator. When it comes to national security, not to mention the subtle adventurous nature of the task.
And you are correct?
Yes, Prime Minister. And also, there is someone else who is an extremely valuable member of our team who can be instrumental in solving these crimes.
You mean a Mrs. Hudson, I believe?
Why, yes.
Don't act surprised, Holmes. MI6 works for me.
Yes, of course. Always.
Tell me more about Mrs. Hudson.
Full name, Martha Louise Hudson. She is the landlady of 221B Baker Street, who rents out to my brother Sherlock and Dr. John Watson. Mrs. Hudson lives in the same building in the flat of her own.
It says here that your brother Sherlock won his way into her good graces after being of moral support when her husband was executed for a double murder in Florida when a drug cartel venture went badly. And due to his assistance, she allows your brother and Watson to have the flat at a lower cost than what it is worth.
Yes, that is correct.
And also she's involved from time to time with MI6 operations.
Yes, of course she is.
We will stay in touch, Mycroft, and there is much to be done and in such a short amount of time.
Yes, Prime Minister.
In the French Chamber of Deputies this afternoon, Monsieur Dalaget reviewed the history of the last-minute diplomatic attempts to avert hostilities.
Okay, I think I've heard enough bad news and rainy weather reports for one evening. Oh, perfect timing. A cup of Herval Twining's tea before I call it a day. Tomorrow shall be a busy day. A trip to Harrod's department store will make for a delightful morning and afternoon for me. Now, I wonder who that could be at this hour of the evening. Hello? Who is it, please?
Mrs. Hudson, my name is Jimmy Rayboard, and I have a medical package for Dr. John Watson.
It's awfully late, Mr. Romort. Couldn't you kindly come back when Dr. Watson is at home?
I would be happy to, Miss Hudson, but it's medical supplies that must be refrigerated. That is why Dr. Watson needed these delivered tonight. He did tell me he was out having dinner with Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson's fiancée.
All right, Mr. Romort. I shall be down in a moment.
Excellent. Thank you, Miss Hudson.
Here I am, Mr. Romort.
Thank you, Miss Hudson. Actually, it's Raymort. Jimmy Raymort.
Oh, yes, of course. The package, please.
Yes, by all means. Here you go.
Thank you, young man. Is there anything else?
I was wondering if you have a flat to rent here at 221B Baker Street.
No, we are all full up here. So sorry. Now, if you don't mind, I have a very busy day tomorrow.
Shopping can really take it out of you. I know that to be true.
Yes, very true. Wait a minute. How do you know that?
And I'm sure you know that the closest tube station to Harrods is Knightsbridge on the Piccadilly line. Be sure to use the Brompton Street exit.
Sir, did you know where I am going tomorrow?
Oh, that was easy. There's a Harris tote bag hanging over there on that metal coat rack. So I just guessed.
A lucky guess it was. Well, anyway, good night to you, sir.
Good night, Mrs. Hudson.
Mary, it was so nice that you were able to get off work tonight to join Sherlock and myself for dinner.
I know, John. What a delightful way to spend the evening.
Don't you agree, Sherlock?
Sherlock?
Why, yes, of course. The wine is quite nice. A lovely red, as I was saying before, a red burgundy wine reflects fresh fruit notes only in very young or very old wines. Scents of raspberries, blackberries, and cherries are typical. Don't you agree, Mary?
Certainly, Sherlock. As I was saying to John, it will be marvelous with our beef stroganoff. Don't you agree?
Yes, the burgundy is certainly quite acceptable.
Quite acceptable? Only acceptable?
Now, John. Don't be too harsh on poor Sherlock. He seems a million miles away this evening.
This evening? Perhaps all the time might be a more appropriate answer.
Cabernet Sauvignon, or a Zinfandel, or a Merlot.
Sherlock, what are you talking about?
It's quite elementary, my dear Watson. A Cabernet Sauvignon has a full fruit profile, with flavors of dark black fruits, such as black currant, blackberry, and black cherry. And those wonderful secondary flavors include vanilla, clove, and cedar, depending on the aging process, of course.
Sherlock, I dare say that you have been much more affected by the murder of your former professor at Oxford than what you told me yesterday.
What do you mean, Watson?
Your focus is off. You don't seem to have the drive or motivation anymore.
Professor Clarkson was a remarkable teacher, a brilliant mind.
Well, what course did he teach?
Calculus. He was brilliant.
Oh, I loved calculus when I took it at Cambridge.
Calculus is the study of change, in the same way that geometry is the study of shape. Calculus has widespread applications in science, economics, and engineering, and can solve many problems for which algebra alone is insufficient.
But can it solve a murder?
John, I think Sherlock might be catching a bad cold. I'm sure it will pass quickly. Don't you think so, Sherlock?
Yes, of course. Has our dinner arrived as yet?
Oh, not yet, Sherlock. Not yet.
John? Mary? The place was pitch dark, but it was evident to me that it was an empty house. Dark. Damp. Smelled like something had recently died.
Holmes, you do sound like you could use a long nap.
Yes, of course. Our feet creaked and crackled over the bare planking, and my outstretched hand touched a wall from which the paper was hanging in ribbons. I saw his thin fingers closed round her wrist and leading her forward down a long hall.
This sounds awfully creepy, Holmes.
We then found ourselves in a large, square, empty room, heavily shadowed in the corners, but faintly lit in the center from the lights of the street beyond. There was no lamp near, and the window was thick with dust, so we could just only discern each other's figures within. My companion put his hand upon my shoulder and then whispered the name. James. James Moriarty.
Hello, Mrs. Hudson here. Yes, I see. Of course. I will be happy to pass on your message to Sherlock Holmes. Yes, I understand. Bye-bye. Professor James Moriarty. Let me check on something. I know that it's here somewhere. Ah, yes, here it is. Professor James Moriarty. His career has been an extraordinary one. He is a man of good birth and excellent education, endowed by nature with a phenomenal mathematical faculty.
At the age of 21, he wrote a treatise upon the binomial theorem. On which the strength of that treatise, I won the mathematical chair at one of our smaller universities and had, to all appearances, a most brilliant career before me. But some people say I had a hereditary tendency of the most diabolical kind. A criminal strain ran through my blood, which, instead of being modified, was increased, rendered infinitely more dangerous by my extraordinary mental powers. Now, of course, I never believed what they said about me. Never.
I believe all I have read about this man. Dark rumors gathered around Moriarty in that university town, and eventually he was compelled to resign his chair and escape to London. I sense a man who is evil and nothing but dangerous. I must drill down and do much more research on that devilish man. Yes, who is it?
Inspector Lestrade of Scotland Yard.
Yes, Inspector, what can I do for you today? Sherlock Holmes is not here at the moment.
Mrs. Hudson, actually, Sergeant Robin Obersham and I are here to speak with you.
Oh, really?
Hello, Mrs. Hudson.
Sergeant Obersham, nice to meet you.
Mrs. Hudson, some time ago, did you read the newspaper or hear on the BBC about the murder of Professor Jeremy Clarkson?
Why, yes, I did. In fact, Sherlock spoke of him quite often.
Really? And what was the nature of his comments about the professor?
Well, Sherlock would usually be sitting over there in his favorite rocking chair and ramble on and on about his days at Cambridge. Was it Oxford? Anyway, Sherlock would say, "Oh, please forgive me. Would either of you care for some tea?"
No, thank you, Mrs. Hudson. Please continue.
Well, Sherlock would speak of Professor Clarkson in terms of his brilliance and his ability to discover mathematical inventions.
Like what, Mrs. Hudson?
Now, hold on a moment. I wrote some of Sherlock's exact ramblings down in my diary. Now, where did I put it? Oh, here it is, here it is.
Now, this should be interesting. Sherlock's ramblings are always worth listening to.
Now, where did I put my reading glasses?
Oh, here they are, Mrs. Hudson, right next to your half-empty cup of tea.
Oh, thank you, Sergeant. Professor Jeremy Clarkson used both discovery and invention, because in a sense, there really wasn't any logical alternative to calculus. It had to be calculus, no matter what form it would have been discovered in. But at the same time, mathematics is an abstract science. You can't find mathematics in the wild.
Fascinating. You know, Mrs. Hudson, I am no expert on the subject of my mathematics professor at City University of London could spend hours talking about calculus, and she used to say, "No matter what angle you look at mathematics, the logical conclusion of the next step of progress was calculus."
Fibonacci!
What? Or should I say who?
She is correct, Inspector. Sherlock said, "I am not talking about mathematical representation of functions like the Fibonacci number." And then, "You won't observe a dying star and receive via radiation or divine providence a pattern of wavelengths that describes some theorem or logarithm. Someone has to make it up, to create it, to invent it."
Sergeant, why did you shout out with such reverberation a Fibonacci number?
Connecting the dots. Isn't that what you're always telling me, Inspector?
Yes, of course.
Mathematics is key. Holmes first observes the work related to Pascal's triangle and the Fibonacci P numbers, which were written on Professor Moriarty's blackboard found in his office.
Now, how does that relate to dear Professor Clarkson, who was killed?
Oh, that is the most important question, Mrs. Hudson.
Yes, always. And then there's Professor Moriarty. Evil.
Your notes, Mrs. Hudson, mention later that Holmes notices a slight difference in Moriarty's behavior, guiding him to the idea that secret codes are being passed to an associate.
Yes. Yes, you are correct. And how do you know this to be true?
I read your notes when you were discussing the Fibonacci numbers.
And so, Mrs. Hudson, we believe that Sherlock eventually realized that the code corresponds with the Fibonacci B numbers. Sherlock then deduces that the horticultural book he saw on Moriarty's office serves as a cipher, based on the fact that the flower in Moriarty's office is dying.
Sherlock, are you still awake?
John, it's barely 12 noon. Of course I'm awake. And why do you ask such a bizarre question?
You were talking in your sleep.
Was I tuning my violin again?
No, you were mumbling something about natural skepticism and inquisitiveness toward the world, and that nothing should ever be taken at face value.
That's quite strange. Somehow I thought I was dreaming about the strings on my violin and the notes of G, D, A, and E. Always tuning those bloody strings.
You are so right, Sherlock. It does need to be tuned.
Yes, it does.
It sounds so empty to me.
Empty. You know, Watson, I consider that a man's brain originally is like a little empty attic, and you have to stock it with such furniture as you choose, very special furniture.
Sherlock, I have absolutely no idea what you're talking about.
It's what I used to think a great deal about while growing up.
Really?
My cousin Charlotte and I used to chat about it, and sometimes even Mycroft would throw his 7 cents into the mix.
Charlotte, When we were talking about my brain being like the attic above us right now, all I could picture was my head with a roof, chimney, and windows with open shutters. And behind the shutters, a tiny face peeking out of the world. Sounds scary, doesn't it?
No, not at all. In fact, I remember that story. The house had a small room with sloped sides and a foreign creature with a funny face waiting to pull the cord and ready to turn the lights off or when commanded to do so. Almost like magic.
Yes, exactly.
Sherlock, there you go again.
Just what is your problem, Mycroft?
That's why you are my younger brother.
Here we go, Charlotte. Another lecture from my older brother, Mycroft.
I saw this one coming at you long before he even opened his mouth to speak those words.
Sherlock, you've got to have visions in your head, and you've got to arrange your experiences both vicarious and direct on a creative framework of ideas and thoughts. Sherlock, you could just take the easy way out and try to remember everything. If you merely do that, then you will fail in life.
That's my brother, Mycroft. Always my best and strongest supporter.
Sherlock, you always know just how to jab Mycroft in the stomach with your words. Exactly at the right time.
Charlotte, I'm not even the least bit amused by Mycroft's attempt to take a verbal poke at me. And by the way, just for your sake, and, yes, even for our listeners, if I may be so bold to address our audience today, I never uttered the phrase, it's elementary, Watson, or in this case, it's elementary, Charlotte.
Sherlock, you're always trying to show off. And for the record, and yes, this is said now by me, just for our audience, although Sherlock said elementary and my dear Watson, he never said them together in any of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's Sherlock Holmes stories. All total, the word elementary actually only appears 8 times in the complete Sherlock Holmes stories and novels, and never, as noted, with a much more commonly spoken, my dear Watson.
Not that anyone cares about all that nonsense.
Let's just say that I was merely attempting to keep the slate clean of falsehoods.
Of course, my dear brother. It's simply elementary, Mycroft, that you would be the one to do that.
Getting back to our story and your brain and how it relates to an attic. As I once explained to a college friend of mine, a fool takes in all the lumber of every sort that he comes across, so that the knowledge which might be useful to him gets crowded out, so that he has a difficulty in laying his hands upon it. Now the skillful workman is very careful indeed as to what he takes into his brain attic.
Brother Mycroft, to be quite honest with you, I have absolutely no idea what the heck you are talking about.
That comes as no surprise to me, Sherlock. None at all.
As always, Brother Mycroft, as always.
As your narrator for today's story, this would be a good time to remind you that Scotland Yard's investigation of the murder of Professor Jeremy Clarkson under the supervision of Inspector Lestrade continues its slow but methodical pace. Professor Moriarty, the Napoleon of crime, continues to lurk in the shadows and will soon come face to face with his arch enemy, Sherlock Holmes. But before we become intertwined with the two of them, Prime Minister Eloise Bannister makes an unexpected house call that begins to unpack the rest of today's mystery.
Wherever you are, you're with the BBC.
When will I ever listen to a newscast where the news of the day is positive and uplifting? Hello? Yes? I see. Really? She will? When?
Mrs. Hudson, it is so nice to finally meet you.
Oh, dear. Prime Minister, I am honored. Please. Sit down. Would you like some tea?
That would be delightful. And Mrs. Hudson, it is a true honor to meet you.
Oh, Prime Minister, please. You are making my face turn red from embarrassment.
Mrs. Hudson, your work during the war, especially at Bletchley Park, helped to break the German Enigma Code was marvelous. Simply marvelous.
Thank you, Prime Minister.
Please call me Eloise.
Oh, okay, if you insist. You know, Eloise, I haven't thought about our work at Bletchley for some time.
Mrs. Hudson, your work, was it in number 8, I believe, am I correct?
Yes, you are correct.
As one of the codebreakers, your job was to decide which messages were most important to intercept or to decode each day. With thousands of messages passing through the various huts, this was vital so that nothing important was missed.
Oh, yes, Eloise, and you know hut number 8 had the highest level of security. And that's where Alan Turing...
Yes, that's where Alan Turing's office was. And you work just down the hall from his office.
My, you certainly have done your homework, Prime... Eloise.
I know a great deal about you, Mrs. Hudson. That's why I'm here today. Alan Turing, spying, breaking codes. Turing headed the Hut 8 team at Bletchley, which carried out cryptanalysis of all German naval signals. This meant that, apart from a period during 1942, when the code became unreadable, Allied convoys could be directed away from the U-boat Wolf Packs. Turing's role was pivotal in helping the Allies during the Battle of the Atlantic.
Oh, that's correct. You know, Eloise, I just remembered. It was just last week that Inspector Lestrade mentioned to me that Scotland Yard thought that Professor Moriarty might be hiding out somewhere near Milton Keynes.
Exactly. That's why one of the reasons we are chatting today.
Really? Interesting.
Excuse me, Mrs. Hudson, I must take this call.
Well, of course, Prime Minister.
Yes. What is it? I see. Where did you say he is now? Is MI6 on board with all of this? Excellent. Thank you. Mrs. Hudson, I must be leaving now. But let me tell you that I need your help on something very important to the national security of our nation.
Oh, yes, Prime Minister, of course. Anything.
Professor Moriarty has secured some highly toxic and poisonous gas of some sort.
Oh, no.
Kevin Redman, the Home Secretary, has declared that 3 persons at this time are suffering from exposure to a nerve agent. Because of this attack, 200 specialists from the RAF and Marines are currently removing contaminated materials to be sent for analysis to the nearby Porton Down Defense Laboratory.
Do you know what type of chemical compound is being used?
Yes, it is called Novichok.
I have heard of such a chemical gas.
From whom?
Well, I heard Sherlock talking about it with his brother Mycroft.
Oh, really? I know that Mycroft likes to think that he is the British government, but I am Prime Minister. Anyway, what else do you remember?
Well, that name, Novichok, means the new guy in Russian, which is no coincidence. Sherlock said, if I recall, that it refers to the 4th generation of solid nerve agents developed in the former Soviet Union, ones manufactured from materials that remain legal under the International Chemical Weapons Convention. Oh, and that took effect in, oh, I believe he said, 1998.
Actually, it was 1997. Mm-hmm. What makes matters worse, Mrs. Hudson, is that we are now smack in the middle of farming season, and farmers are spraying their crops.
And that was Mycroft's biggest concern. He was most concerned that Moriarty could get that nerve gas into the hands of his covert agents and contaminate the soil and the air in our farming communities.
Exactly, Mrs. Hudson. And the late Jeremy Clarkson, the mathematics professor, also had some involvement with several large chemical research corporations.
So that's where Jeremy Clarkson comes in. Mm.
Hello? Yes. Moriarty here. This is code 6483. I understand. This connection is 5x5. The binary agents are first made as ultrafine powders, and then it is turned into either liquid or gas. And since these toxins are related to pesticides, we can then cloak them as agricultural effort. Say that again. Okay, I understand. So what I thought was correct. that a small amount of the Novichok agent A230 was also synthesized in the Czech Republic in 2017 for the purpose of obtaining analytical data to help defend against these toxic compounds. Okay. Thank you. So that's what Professor Clarkson was working on. He got what he deserved.
Watson, are you finished with your latest entry into your daily narrative, or diary, or whatever you call it?
Yes, I am, Sherlock. Actually, it's called my daily blog, if you recall.
Professor Jeremy Clarkson.
What about him?
Who?
Professor Clarkson.
He's dead.
Yes, I know that. But why did you mention his name?
He was murdered. Yes, we know that.
Yes, I know that we know that.
If you eliminate the impossible, whatever remains, however improbable, must be the truth.
The best answer is sometimes the easiest and most logical answer.
Occam's razor.
But what does that have to do with Professor Clarkson?
Before I answer that, I've always been fascinated with the concept of Occam's razor.
Really? Why is that, Sherlock?
I believe that Occam's razor should not be used in the place of logic, scientific methods, and personal insights. In the long term, a judgment must be backed by empirical evidence, not just its simplicity.
Mary, good evening.
Good evening, John, and a good evening to you, Sherlock.
Hello, Mary.
So, I hear that Occam's razor is the topic of the moment.
Why, yes. How did you know?
I was outside the door of your flat, and I heard.
Eavesdropping, eh?
Hardly. When you two are in one of your investigatory conversations, you both tend to be just a tad bit louder.
I think not.
Anyway, getting back to Occam and his razor, my concern about Occam's razor is just a matter of fact. The world is more complicated than any of us can conceive.
How so, Mary?
Well, sometimes the simplest model just isn't the correct one.
Precisely, Mary. In fact, hold on. It says right here, in this book, that most people oversimplify Occam's razor to mean that the simplest answer is usually correct.
I've always thought that that was an oversimplification.
But the meaning, what the Franciscan friar William of Occam really wanted to emphasize, is that you shouldn't make things more complicated. Meaning, if a simpler explanation was at the ready, pare it down, prune the excess.
Come in, Mrs. Hudson.
Dr. Watson, how did you know I was at the door?
Don't you know?
Sherlock, do let me tell her.
Yes, Sherlock, I'd much rather have Dr. Watson explain such matters to me, if you don't mind.
Let the timbers fall from the Tower of London if I dare to step on Dr. Watson's lines here.
Thank you, Sherlock.
Think nothing of it, Watson.
Mrs. Hudson, as I was saying, your door knock is quite distinctive.
Really?
John, I can't wait to hear this one.
Mrs. Hudson, when you knock on our door, your knuckles quickly flip to the right, as if you were grabbing at a moth that was pestering you. There is a rhythm to your knock.
Oh, Sherlock, Dr. Watson, I do need to tell you something.
Mrs. Hudson, shall I depart ever so briefly?
Oh, no, that's fine. You can stay, dearie.
Good, I'd love to be in on this discussion.
Go on, Mrs. Hudson.
Oh, guess who came to visit me earlier today?
Let me guess. What if I said Prime Minister Bannister?
Sherlock, how did you know?
Several very obvious clues. Number one, someone already told me that they had saw several custom-built armored Jaguar XJ Sentinels parked outside.
And number two?
And secondly, over to my right, on the small table, you will notice a white business card that merely says, Eloise Bannister, PM.
Sherlock, when did someone tell you she was here? I have been with you all day here, today, and I heard no one tell you that.
Watson, no one actually verbally told me. They sent me a text.
Mrs. Hudson, now that we all know that the Prime Minister was here today, what did she tell you?
Oh, it could be quite devastating. She told me that Professor Moriarty might be in possession of a deadly nerve gas called A230.
It is deadly, and many believe it can kill thousands of people in a few minutes.
Oh, deadly. Quite deadly.
I am amazed at how much you know about this nerve agent, Sherlock.
Mary, Sherlock can identify a software designer by his tie and an airline pilot by his right thumb.
I am a doctor who has been deployed into a war zone, and I'm working directly with the master detective, Sherlock Holmes.
Why is it that my shrink always says, James Moriarty, you do need to get more sleep? That's when I say, when nightmares keep waking you up around 3 to 5 in the morning, every morning, you stop sleeping. In my dreams, I see faded faces and hear unknown voices, mumbling words in an imaginary language.
Moriarty, is that when you decided to kill Professor Jeremy Clarkson?
Sherlock Holmes, I was wondering when you would be lured into my web.
Here I am.
Let me tell you something, Sherlock. When you get trapped in insomnia, everything looks like a copy of a copy of a copy, and the original is quite ugly.
Why did you kill my favorite college professor? Was it because of that terrible nerve agent A230? Was it for the money? Or the glory? Tell me. Tell me, you monster.
Yes, that's why.
What do you mean? Why, man? Tell me. I must know.
Because Professor Jeremy Clarkson, the distinguished university professor, was your favorite professor. That's why.
That's it. That's why.
Yes, because you are Sherlock Holmes, and I have that power over you.
Take him away, Inspector Lestrade. Get this monster out of my sight.
This has been The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes here on the 17-time award-winning WGTD Radio Theater. Written by Steve Brown and Michael Alstrup and directed by Renee Bouchel. We've been broadcasting today from the Southwest Branch of the Kenosha Public Library. Our stars today are from the 91.1 Players: Renee Bouchel, Vicky Dumay, Todd Eves, Brett Hodeck, Jill Jensen, Gary Lean, Andrew Potter, Larry Rowe, Anne-Marie Schmid, Cameron Spencer, Peyton Spencer, and Joe Van Hulley. Support for the WGTD Radio Theater comes from the Kenosha Law Firm of Aaliyah Dumay and McTernan. On the web, it's addmlaw.more. And also from the Kenosha Public Library, where Kenosha connects all four branches, Northside, Uptown, Simmons, and right here at the Southwest Branch on the web. On the web, it's called mykpl.info. And finally, supporting the WGTD Radio Theater is the not-for-profit Brown Alstrup Performing Arts Foundation, located in the village of Salem Lakes, Wisconsin. On the web at brownalstrupfoundation.org. Be sure to join us September 28th for another episode of our original series, Orson Welles as the Caine Shadow, when we broadcast once again from Lake Lawn Resort in beautiful Delavan, Wisconsin. For the WGTD Radio Theater and the 91.1 Players, I'm Julie Burton, thanking you for joining us today for The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes.
And good morning. This is Steve Brown, co-executive producer of the WGTD Radio Theater. I did want to mention that the WGTD Radio Theater has just been awarded 3 major awards from the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association. These are the awards for excellence in broadcasting. 2 first place awards were for Best Significant Community Impact, the WGTD Radio Theater's broadcast of The Caine Shadow. Sayonara, my friends, the story of World War II Japanese Americans in Delavan, Wisconsin. And also Best Live On-Site Broadcast, the WGTD Radio Theater's broadcast of The Caine Shadow, the Lewis Gastdurler murder mystery. And this was a live broadcast from the Town Square Bar in Trever, Wisconsin, which is in the village of Salem Lakes. And this is where an actual gangland murder of Gastdurler took place back in 1930. and finally a second place award for best use of audio, the WGTD Radio Theater, the Stage Door Canteen World War II theme. And you're listening to WGTD HD, serving Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Thank you for listening to the WGTD Radio Theater's live broadcast from the Southwest Branch Library, The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson, The Murder of Professor Jeremy Clarkson.